Hi, good morning.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, everybody. Tabile, can you please fly the agenda? It is 9 o'clock. Marcel, do we have a quorum? Thank you, Tabile. Can I have an indication if we have a quorum to start the meeting? Marcel. Good morning, everybody. Just an apology, Marcel has a technical error with the sound, so we couldn't hear, but we do have a quorum. The agenda is in front of us, members. Our first item is the opening and welcome by the chairperson, and then it's apologies. And then immediately we will go over to the Department of Health, who will give us report on the mitigating and the impact of COVID-19, and that will be for about 20 minutes. Then we will have discussions and responses from members. You can ask your questions or give your inputs there. And then we will have the adoption after we finish with the Department of Health, of our adoption of the Department of Health budget vote report, also DSD budget vote report, and then the adoption of committee meetings, and then the adoption of the committee's third term program. I believe that this meeting will last from 9 up until 1 o'clock. Before I do my opening and welcome, can we adopt the agenda? Can I have a mover for the adoption of the agenda, please? Members, can you hear me?
Good morning, Chairperson. Baja moves.
Thank you, Member Baja. Is there a seconder?
Christian,
seconder.
Member Christian. Sorry, the agenda has been adopted. Now, let me take this opportunity, members, to welcome each and everyone back from from your constituency period, and also to the members of the Select Committee who participate in the oversight to the provinces of KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. Members, thank you very much for your commitment and your hard work during this trying times. I also just want to convey my condolences this morning to Member Maleka, who has lost another family member. She has lost a brother last night. Member Maleka, our prayers are with you. I see you are in this meeting, but we are keeping you in our prayers, my sister. Then I also want to inform the committee members that I'm so glad Marcel is in this meeting. She's not supposed to be in this meeting because she's still on sick leave. Marcel was admitted to hospital last week and has been discharged, but she is still doing her duties as our secretary to this committee. Let's also keep Marcel in our prayers. Then I want to congratulate our new minister. We were used to call him our DM. Now he is our minister, Minister Tsopasla. Congratulations. And we're really looking forward in working with you as the minister. Then I want to congratulate my co-chairperson of health from the National Assembly, Dr. Dlomo. Congratulations, Dr. Dlomo, on being deployed in this position to be our new deputy minister. As this committee, we're looking forward in working together with you. We have come a long way and we know that you are up for this task. We are very fortunate to have you as the deputy minister, as we have a working relationship with all members of this committee. Wish you well, Dr. Dlomo. Members, we are in a very difficult space at this moment, but we are fortunate that we are still intact in the select committee. We did not lose any member or any staff member in this committee during the COVID period. So we must thank God for sparing us to continue with the work to make sure that we look after the health of the people of South Africa. Yes, I know all of us has lost loved ones during this time, but we must be thankful that we are still well and that we can continue with the duties bestowed upon us to make sure that we serve this country and that we are looking after the well-being of all our people. With no further ado, I want to open this meeting, and I first want to hear from Tabile if Marcel is if she's still having a technical problem. Is there any apologies? Marcel sent me a message that we've got an apology from Member Letuli. I don't know if there is any other apologies. And then we've got an apology from the Minister of Health, Dr. Pasla, who is attending to other meetings. And our Deputy Minister is with us. Is there any other apologies, Tabi or Marcel, if you are on the platform?
Morning, Chairperson, members and colleagues. I haven't received any apologies.
Thank you, Tabile. So it is only the apology from Member Letuli and the apology from the Minister. Can we accept that apologies, members?
I accept that, Chair. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Member Tsabaleng. Without any further ado, members, I will hand over to the Deputy Minister, Dr. Dlomo.
Good morning, our Chairperson, Honorable Gillian, and the rest of the members in the Select Committee on Health and Social Services. Thank you very much for those warm well wishes that you have expressed here, and I will definitely convey that to our minister. Minister Phahla unfortunately is in another meeting briefing the National Command Council on some of the work that we are today going to be briefing you on. I am joined by Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who is a DDG in the department on NHI, but for now focusing on vaccine and vaccine rollout. We are also joined by another DDG, Dr. Anne Van Clay, who's very familiar to the honorable members for the role that he plays in the department. There's also PLOs that have joined me in this platform, Khadla and Kawegazi, those that I've seen in the platform. We also need to, though honorable Gillian, it has been some few weeks, but still convey our sincere condolence to the sad loss in the family. We pray continuously for you to get strength to actually cope with the situation of losing a partner and a very strong family member, and to all those of our members who have lost their loved ones during this period of the constituency period week that we had. As the agenda is stipulating, honourable members, we are here to brief the select committee on our programs and our progress that we are making on the vaccine rollout and the impact it has on the country. Maybe just to give and make opening remarks that in February this year, quite a lot of South Africans, including all of us, were hesitant whether there will be a day when we'll have enough vaccines in the country. Now I can confirm that we do have enough vaccines in the country. We were also not readily available to open as many sites as we would have wished in February, because opening sites without vaccine would not have been cost effective and productive. We are now saying there have been more sites, vaccination sites opened, including sites in the malls, drive-throughs, in areas that pension pay points, and we'll probably listen to the committee to advise us what more to do to expand. The challenge that we do face now is the hesitancy, which we pick up from some of our South Africans in terms of the uptake of the vaccines. The president made a pronouncement a few weeks ago that he would want to see us vaccinating up to 300,000 South Africans per day. We're excited when we're sitting at about 275,000 on the 21st of July, and we're hopefully saying we will be getting to the 300,000. But recently we are now down to about 175,000 vaccines per day. Now, that is actually a red light that something needs to be happening that is not happening. We have targeted age groups that we have started on the 60-year-olds and above. The uptake has been good, but we want to accelerate that to almost about over 70%. We are not there yet. The 50 years and above, the uptake has not been impressive, and we would also want to start doing much more on that. On the 35 years and above, we have not seen a very significant uptake, and that is our worry, as in the next few weeks we will be opening, in fact within 2 weeks, opening for the 18 years and above. Almost every South African who's eligible for a vaccine, because the vaccine starts from 18 and above. There's also been a noticeable gender differences, that more of females have been available to take vaccines than males. And we also therefore would have to be collectively creating a demand for vaccines. Vaccine people must come forward what we do have. Why are we really pressing upon this? It's because there's a wide information that if you vaccinate, you actually decrease chances of you getting a complicating COVID-19 infection, and you also decrease chances of being admitted into an ICU or hospital. And that is what we would like to see happening, so that this COVID-19 can just become like any other infection that should not be a life-threatening as it is currently. And we are beginning to see in the other parts of the world, stadia being opened and people going in that was, they've actually gone towards herd immunity. We want to get there sometime during the course of this year. So a formal presentation, honorable members, will be tabled by our Dr. Nicholas Crisp, and therefore members will then probably interact with us and we'll be able to take questions thereafter. If, with your permission, Honorable Gillian, if I could now allow Dr. Nicholas Crisp to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Gillian, Deputy Minister, Honorable members of the House, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I'm able to share. Yes, that looks good. Right, so I thought, as requested, what we would try to do is just to give a snapshot of what it is that we are doing at the moment and where we are. And I won't repeat what the Honourable Deputy Minister has said, but I will try to build on some of the points that he has made. So it's always good to remind ourselves what we're trying to achieve, so that when we deviate from the path, we know how to pull our way back. And what this slide is showing us that is essentially we have two major objectives. The first objective is to prevent as much severe COVID disease and death as we possibly can. That is the ultimate aim at the moment. But we have a second objective, and that is to get as many people in the country vaccinated so that as a society, there's sufficient immunity. We call it herd immunity in science, but you can call it community immunity. But to try and build up a pool of immunity in a community so that we are all protected by one another's immunity. The first strategy in reaching objective one is to get the highest risk groups and to vaccinate them first. So when we started out a year ago with COVID, everybody thought that there were certain comorbidities which were the primary problem. But we have learned over the past year that in fact age is the single biggest challenge, and it's people over the age of 50 and particularly those over the age of 60 and into the elderly years, who irrespective of any comorbidity are hugely at risk, far more at risk than younger people, even with comorbidities. The second strategy to vaccinate as many people as possible is to try and reduce or even ultimately halt the transmission of the virus. Now, that's extremely difficult, and those who follow the global discussions on this will know that because we are seeing such rapid mutations to different variants of this virus, it's very, very difficult to get to this point of building herd immunity. We don't actually know how much of the population we need to vaccinate to get to herd immunity. So what we're aiming to do is to try and get us back into some kind of survival mode where the community and workplaces are safe places to be. We want to prevent lockdowns and other social economic disruptions, and we want the society, education, the economy, and all other parts of our lives to open up to as full a capacity as possible. So the main, before we had vaccines, the only way we could try and curtail the spread of the virus was through non-pharmaceutical interventions, and we all know them. Wearing of masks and washing of hands, social distancing, and making sure we have good ventilation. And those continue to be a mainstay and will always be a mainstay while this virus is in circulation. So I'm not going to particularly talk about them because we've heard them and we will drum them into the public over and over and over again why it's important to wear a mask and to wash our hands. So we'll just focus on the three main legs of the service delivery and then the overall, the fourth leg of our war on COVID. So the first one on vaccine supply. So as far as vaccines are concerned, the Honourable Deputy Minister said a moment ago, we are now finally in a position where we have plenty of vaccines. So we received Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the week of 26th of July. We've received another smaller batch of Johnson & Johnson vaccine now in the 9th of August, and we are expecting in the future, in the week of the 23rd and the 30th of August, a total of 6.5 million doses of Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I think honourable members will be aware that this has been a big problem for us in the past because the vaccine source stock, if you like, the active portion of the vaccine was manufactured in the United States and there was contamination in the plant, and globally we didn't have Johnson & Johnson vaccine for a very long time. So we did use it for the Sisonke study and then it stopped. And now we have it again, and it's starting to trickle into the system, and by the end of August, it will be hopefully flowing normally again. That's an important part of our vaccine security because it's a single-dose vaccine. We also get, we use Pfizer vaccine as our second most, the second vaccine, and it has been the mainstay of our vaccination program since the national program started on the 17th of May. We buy COVID vaccine here, this line. We get weekly deliveries on Sundays. They come in normally at 1.5 million doses, and you'll see all the way through August, every Sunday we get 1.5 million doses of Pfizer vaccine. It was just this one dip, and in fact, this Johnson & Johnson vaccine came at the end of the week, not the beginning of the week. And so this was where we had crunch time. And but fortunately, the American government's COVAX donation to us, a total of 5.66 million doses, these two amounts arrived on the Saturday and then the following Tuesday morning. So the point is that as we sit today in this week of the 16th of August, we have quite a lot of vaccine. In fact, a huge amount of vaccine in the country, and we are expecting a lot more vaccine before the end of August. Our actual delivery dates into September are not known to us yet. We normally get those towards the end of the month. So as we heard, the biggest challenge right now is not vaccine anymore, and it's not our capacity because we have well over 3,000 sites on any day, made up of very big mass sites right the way down to the small mobile sites, and a range of different kinds of vaccination, fixed and movable sites that are running in all nine provinces. The biggest challenge is now driving demand. So getting the public past the point where we are now. So we are here. We have got over 12% of our population is vaccinated. And technically, this green portion of this graph, where the effort that's required should be low and vaccination coverage should be high, and what we expect from looking at other countries is that up to about 45% coverage is normally not that difficult to achieve. Beyond that 45%, one has to work very hard. And depending on the uptake in any particular country, from 45 to 55, it's starting to get difficult. And beyond that, it gets very difficult to get to 65 and 70%. And our target at this stage is to get to 70% of the adult population, that means over 18, by the end of the year. That's what we would like to achieve. But even getting to 65%, we would regard as a success, and then we would push on in the new part of next year. So we are trying to understand better what it is that makes people come for vaccination or not come for vaccination. And if one looks at I'll take you through this little diagram. What people think and feel about vaccination is really important to the individual who either trusts or doesn't trust or believes there are safety concerns or doesn't believe there are safety concerns. And providing information so that people are able to make this decision and feel confident that they're getting a vaccination that's safe and effective is the starting point. But there are also a whole lot of social pressures that take place in communities, and they're different from one community to another, which makes messaging a little bit difficult. So if the provider is recommending, so a clinic or a doctor in the environment is recommending, that would normally assist with generating demand. But there are also other social norms, and they may be related to traditional beliefs, they may be religious beliefs, and there may be a whole range of other social norms. We also know that there are gender differences, as the Honourable Deputy Minister said, and people share stories that they hear. And sometimes it's like this game you play as a child called Broken Telegraph. The message gets changed as it goes from one person to the next, and a whole lot of information is not information at all. It's just rumors and myths, and very difficult within the social environment to counteract what is not the truth and what is the truth. But whatever people pick up or feel about vaccination, it results in their motivation to be ready, willing, have the intention, or to be hesitant to vaccinate. Once they've got to that point, there are a whole lot of practical issues which are mostly in the health sector domain, and those relate to us providing the vaccine, having it available, making it accessible, so not all our vaccination stations are situated in fixed facilities. Some of them are taken out to people in particular settings, making sure there's no cost and that we limit the cost to the taxpayer, or no cost to the individual at the point of service, making sure the quality of the service and the satisfaction that people get within their space, whichever site they go to, they are satisfied with the services that they get. And then sometimes one needs to provide incentives for people to vaccinate or sometimes make some form of punitive arrangement as well. And we have to overcome what we are currently experiencing with intervention fatigue. People are just tired of hearing the same old all the time. So when one gets past all of this, we start with registration. Registration is the same as opening a file to get when you go to a doctor or a clinic or a hospital, you open a file or you get your old file, and that's the equivalent of registration. And this can be done at home or it can be done on site when you arrive. And if you are a little bit find it difficult with the various digital ways of registering, then somebody else can help you. We call that assisted registration. But once someone is registered on the system will then schedule an appointment. From the end of this week, there will also be opportunities for people to change the scheduling, to change the date, and to change the time and the place of their vaccination. And then when an individual arrives at a site having decided to get vaccinated, they give consent, accept the vaccine. There may be some delay or refusal that takes place at registration where people get scared of needles and things. But this is what happens in preparation for the vaccination and finally the vaccination. So we need to make, as the country and particularly as the health sector, together with our colleagues in other departments, we need to make the journey. We need to flatten this line of the hill that needs to be climbed to increase the enthusiasm of the public and the willingness to be vaccinated. We are aware that some of the factors that are currently big pressures are income. People have to travel to get to sites. Their place of residence is sometimes even now still far from the 3,000 sites. There are people with disabilities that find it difficult to get to or into a vaccination site. And there are issues around nationality where people don't have records and may not come for vaccination for fear of being persecuted. And this is made worse by social fragmentation, particularly you will see in a moment that the small portion of the public that is insured with medical schemes benefits from a greater access to the services over those who aren't insured. That's a constant problem in our health system. So what we're trying to do is trying to take this gradient that is offering resistance, we call it the social gradient, and try and lower it, decreasing the opportunity cost and decreasing the impact on a family of somebody going for vaccination. So in other words, even 40 Rand for a taxi fare may be a limiting factor for somebody going for vaccination. We need to see how we can reduce that. And we're trying to enhance the demand and push our way from registration through providing information and reassurance, motivating people, making sure it's convenient, giving a positive user experience, and then making sure this person is a user champion to motivate others to register again. And if we can get all of these right in a particular station, in a particular district, sub-district or province, then the vaccination numbers increase and the whole process is able to roll up this gradient reasonably smoothly. So how are we doing? Where's the challenge? Remember that first slide said what we want to do is keep people from getting seriously ill and keeping them out of hospital. And to do that, one of the indicators we are looking at is how are we doing on vaccination coverage for the 60 pluses. Now, vaccination coverage, we measure the total number of vaccines given, but we also measure the number of people who are vaccinated. So if you're getting Pfizer and you get two vaccinations, we only count that, those two vaccinations as one person when we look at coverage. And with Johnson & Johnson, it's a single dose that's coverage. And what we see is not always what we expect. So Limpopo province, in the age 60 plus, which we would have thought would be a difficult population to reach in the settings of that rural province, have done the best by far. They are have vaccinated 66% of all people over the age of 60 in that province. On the other end of the spectrum, Northern Cape has only vaccinated 37%. Now, the challenge is to understand why is Northern Cape and Mpumalanga, Northwest and Gauteng, why are they not doing as well in their vaccination coverage as the other provinces? And then as we unpack these, and I'll show a couple of just one or two slides, we can then start to target where their interventions are not effective so that we can get these rates up. Remember, this graph is just looking at the 60 pluses, whereas the urban provinces do a little bit better with the younger population. Then I mentioned the issue about inequity. So it's a concern that the insured population, those with medical aids, as a percentage of the total people who are insured in the age bracket, we're still looking at 60 pluses, we see big gaps in Limpopo where the insured population have managed to get to almost 100%, whereas the uninsured are sitting on 64%. Western Cape, also a big gap. 80% of the insured are vaccinated, but only 46% of the uninsured. And KwaZulu-Natal, also a very big gap. Whereas if you look at the Eastern Cape and the Free States, the difference between the insured and the uninsured is not so wide, and the same with Northwestern and Mpumalanga. So these provinces are a concern for a different reason, and that is that they are generally not vaccinating as many people as they should. And again, I emphasize this graph is only looking at the 60 pluses. These are the people we're trying to keep out of hospital. And then others are doing a lot better, and we need to understand what they're doing differently. So we take everybody along and leave nobody behind. Now, looking at a provincial level sometimes masks what's going on at a local level. And this is a very busy graph, but what I'm going to show you is in the green box on the left-hand side are the districts that have the greatest percentage of their 60-plus population vaccinated. So from 80% in Ngungundlovu and Ugu, to 77% in Overberg. Those are the highest achievers in terms of coverage of over 60s vaccination. On the other end of the spectrum, we have very rural districts like Pixikaseme, Nkangala in Mpumalanga, and ZF Agbaku, which is also in Northern Cape. But what's worrying is when we see Sedi Beng, which is sitting in Gauteng, and we see Ikurileni, which is in Gauteng, districts that have the geographical advantage of cities that are still not performing at very high levels and have not managed to reach their 60-plus population. So what we're trying to do is to get everybody on the right-hand side of the graph to the left-hand side of the graph and get greater coverage of, in this particular case, the 60-pluses. The 50-plus picture is not very different across the districts, but it is a little bit different in the younger population where the spread of where the coverage is a bit different from one district to the next. In the planning team in the Department of Health, together with the private sector, we actually look at sub-districts or local municipality level because even within a district, you can find quite a lot of variability. So globally, how are we doing, and where are we seeing the challenge? So from early in March, when healthcare workers in February started being vaccinated, through March and April, and up to the 17th of May, this was the Sisonke study with Johnson & Johnson vaccines being vaccinated. And we got up to somewhere around 340,000 people by the middle of May. And then we started with the national program, and it picked up. Now, remember, there was no Johnson & Johnson in this early part of the program. And then we got one consignment of 1.5 million doses of short expiry Johnson & Johnson to add to the program during this July-August period. And we were able to pick up a very steep graph, as you heard, over 250 and closer to 300,000 vaccinations in one day. You can see these little blips in the line. Those are the weekends where we're not managing to pick up on weekend vaccinations. And what's concerning is that if you continue with this line at the rate we were going up to this point at the beginning of August, the end of July, and if it continued on the same trajectory, we would have been far further with our program. But it has started to level off, and we sit now as of 14th of August at 9.373 million doses. It's just over 9.5 million, 9.55 million as of yesterday. And here you can see the numbers of doses. So you will see Gauteng looks like they're doing very well because they do a lot of numbers of doses. But as we saw from the previous diagram, because the population is so huge, this is actually not as good as it looks when you look at the ratios of people to population. If we look at the vaccines that are being administered, so up to last week, the 9.37 million doses administered, they are made up of 495,000, so just under 500,000 Johnson & Johnson doses that were administered during the Sisonke study. So that is to healthcare workers. Then we continued with the Johnson & Johnson vaccination. We got 1.5 million doses of that short expiry date. It's all been used now. And that 1.5 million includes mostly essential services sector in the public service, because we had no guarantee of other Johnson & Johnson vaccine coming, so we kept it in the public service program. So collectively, Johnson & Johnson, we have vaccinated over 2 million people, and that is a single dose, so that is fully vaccinated people. With Pfizer, it's different. And we have to give people two doses of vaccine. So we have vaccinated so far 5.3 million first doses of vaccine, and just on 2 million doses of second dose Pfizer vaccine, which makes up the 7.3 million that you see on the top of the screen. And you can see in the graph the relative proportions of first and second dose. So when we talk about fully vaccinated people, totally protected, what we are doing is we are counting the second dose Pfizer vaccine, that 2 million, and we're adding it to the total Johnson & Johnson vaccines. So right now we sit with 4 million people fully vaccinated. We are sitting with 9 million people with at least some vaccination. So what does the daily performance look like? Well, you can see this is now the Sisonke period. The colors of the lines are reflected here, Eastern Cape in yellow, Gauteng in red, Western Cape in this purple color. And if you follow each one of the graphs, we picked up very rapidly in the beginning. Then we had that violence in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal that caused a bit of a dip. And then it picked up again very nicely until the 21st of July. And a number of things happened at that period. One is that for the first time, we overused our vaccine supply and many sites did not have vaccine available, and we were not able to maintain the tempo while we waited for vaccine. We also got to the end of our public sector major prioritized programs, and only the community programs were continuing, and the recent intake of the 35 to 49 year old population had already started in this period of build-up. So in the last 3 weeks, we have lost momentum. In fact, 4 weeks. And I just this morning looked at this morning's program, and I see we are back up to about here because we have now, we've turned a bit of a dip, and hopefully today and tomorrow we'll see it climbing again and an improvement happening. This is similar to the previous graph I showed, but just showing each of the provinces within that climbing template. So our conclusion at the moment is that we've lost momentum and we need to get that back. We need everyone to create demand from the public. We have to keep on with our non-pharmaceutical interventions. And besides that, the only major intervention we have is vaccination. We need to convey messages to the public, everyone, all of us, that vaccination is safe. Vaccination, we can prove that vaccination prevents serious illness and prevents loss of life. If we look at the number of infections in healthcare workers, before vaccination on the Sisonke study and now, it is a dramatic improvement. There are very, very few healthcare workers who have been sick. And if we look at the 60 pluses who have been admitted to hospital, we also know that the numbers are way smaller than they were prior to vaccination. We also know and are warned that this COVID-19 virus mutates frequently. And the immunity from one variant may not be effective against the next variant. And that's why we have to make sure that we have sufficient vaccine and different vaccines that may or may not interact differently with variants that may still come. They will definitely still come. We just don't know when, and we don't know what variants and what they will look like. We are starting to see real protection of the most vulnerable people. Those are the over 60s. But we need more plus 50s to come, and we are concerned, as the Deputy Minister said, that women are not coming in, are coming in large numbers, but men are trailing behind, and the ratio of female to male vaccinations is more or less 60% are women and 40% are men. And the concern is older men in particular will end up getting sick when the next wave arrives and will be hospitalized and die. We also know that herd immunity is going to remain elusive, especially when we are only at 12 or 13% of the adult population vaccinated. So there's an urgency to get more people to the vaccination stations because we do now have the capacity and the vaccines. And we know that COVID is going to be with the world for some years to come. And until we can get the whole globe to have sufficient immunity, the movement of people between countries and around the world is going to be a problem for us. So thank you, Chair. I'm going to leave it at that, and we will take some questions. Thank you.
Yeah. Honorable Chair, the members who are here supporting me in the presentation will then participate in supporting us in answering questions. We end there with our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, and Doctor, for that very good report. I will now open for members to ask the questions or any comments. I see the hand of Member Latuli. Welcome, Member Latuli, and Member Baha. It's the first to answer. Is there any other indication of any member wants to pose a question?
Apologies, Chairperson. Honorable Christians, my device is not working. I also want to ask a question, please.
Okay, Member Christians. So we will start with Member Latuli, then Member Baha, then Member Christians, and then we will come back if there is more members. Thank you. We can start with Member Latuli.
Greetings, Chairperson. To everyone and my for turning a bit late.
Member Latuli, your signal is very, very bad.
Can I ask you?
Member Latuli.
My question to the Minister of the Department, I'm from KZN, and even in the report, we see that there is a rise in the infection in KZN.
Member Latuli, we are losing you. Can I ask you to move to a better...
Chairperson, can you hear me?
We are losing you, Member Latuli. Can you maybe move to a better...
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you now hear me? Can you just repeat your question because we have lost you? Member Latuli? Member Bacher, can you continue? And then we can come back to Member Latuli if the reception is better.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible enough. Firstly, Chairperson, let me say that it's quite important to get this briefing so that we get a sense of how we are doing in reaching out to the people during this COVID. Chair, let me say that tomorrow I'm going for my
Yes, I can hear you.
Member Latuli, can I will call Member Bacha is now on the platform. I will call you after Member Bacha.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. So I'm saying that
continue, Member Bacha. Member Bacha, you are muted, so we can't hear you. You can continue.
Yeah. I think I'm fine now. So I was saying that, Chairperson, I'll be going for my second dosage tomorrow, which would be, I wish that everybody would take that opportunity to get the dosages as required in order to be safe from this pandemic. But, Chairperson, what I want to come up with is probably something that is different from how the department is approaching the issue of dosages. And I would want to pick up the brains of the DM as well on this matter. That, for instance, on the news yesterday, there's a 12-year-old who died of COVID-19. But also I know of 3 17-year-olds who infected by the COVID-19 as well as we speak. Now, probably at what point would we be able to say that because there is not much progress that we are doing in taking the different ages as stipulated, at what point would we say that let's open this up, let people come, let those who are willing to take the dosage be able to come and get it? Because my worry, Chairperson, is that if a 12-year-old passes on because of COVID, it means that COVID has no age limit, as it were. And if people are not taking the dosages as provided by our government, and some are already suffering, how or what would it take for our government and our department to say, let's open this up, let people come, let them receive the dosages required. And as people see others coming, maybe that way would be able to push others to do as well. Because my second concern is that people are still dying in spite of you know, the dosages that are available. So that's one point, Chairperson, that I wanted to raise. The second one, Chairperson, is that what kind of methods are we using probably as a department to open communication up, which would reach people even in rural areas, for them to know that they can go to point A in order to get the dosages that they require, because people are still dying. And again, that's the same reason as my first point, that as people continue to die, there will be that panic. And some people feel that they don't need to get the dosage and so on. But I think those who are willing to do so, irrespective of the age limit, should be allowed to do so. Because for me, I'm worried that for every person who dies, irrespective of age, it's one person too many. So I'm saying, Chairperson, at what point would we open it up to say, let people come through, let them get the dosage, because it is available, but people are not coming through to get it. So some can't wait to get there, but their time is not yet opened up. So can that be looked at and we open it up a bit? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Baga. Is Member Letuli now available? Member Letuli?
Chairperson, I'm in. Am I audible?
You are much better.
Thank you so much. And my apologies again for the network. And sorry, Chair, if I'm going to repeat the questions that have already been asked, because I couldn't hear anything. But my question to the department and to the Deputy Minister is that we see that in KZN, the infections are rising up. What strategy do they have in making sure that the numbers are going down? And also, Chairperson, in terms of vaccination, people are still on panic mode because there are a lot of fake news that is going around on social media. What is the department doing in making sure that they are in line with those fake news? When the fake news come in, and then they can clarify that it's fake news, because I feel a lot of people are not vaccinating because they are scared. Some news are saying people will die in 2 years, and some are saying that people, even if they are vaccinated, they still get infected. And the last question, Chairperson, I would like to know, with those who have been vaccinated are not being infected again, and if they are, what are the numbers vice versa, those who are vaccinated and those who are not?
Member Letuli, we've lost you. Can you unmute?
I was done, Chairperson. I don't know whether you heard all my questions.
Yes, we did. We did get it. Thank you for your input, Member Letuli.
Thank you so much.
So we will move to Member Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question is around children. Now, we've seen increasing rates amongst children of COVID-19, and we've also seen the severity of those COVID-19 infections being more severe. So my question to the department is, what is being done to bring more information to perhaps schools, to the general public, to parents, to homes? What kind of communication is going out so that parents can take the proper precautions to safeguard their children, as it is really problematic? I've seen those rates increasing in the Northern Cape, and I've also heard about other provinces where the severity as well as the rate of COVID-19 in children has been increasing. My next question, Dr. Chris stated that in the Northern Cape, the vaccine rate stands at 37%. Now, that in itself is extremely problematic. But taking into consideration the scope and the vastness of the Northern Cape, I think that it is the province that is not going to the people. So my concern is us reaching the people in the rural areas. What is being done? In the beginning already, it was mentioned that the vaccine should go to the people and not the people go to the vaccine. So I think it is imperative that especially rural provinces and a vast, vast province such as the Northern Cape, that it is essential to communicate with at provincial level with the Department of Health to see to it that the vaccine gets to the people. Then a question of clarity. Now, it is obviously very important that we all go for the vaccine. I'm also due for my second vaccine shortly. However, the public is very emotional and extremely frightened of going for the vaccine. Now, my question is, what is being done to allay the fears of the public? Now, at no stage have we seen government embarking on an information campaign to allay the fears of the public. And I think that is one of the reasons why our vaccination rates are so low. For example, questions such as the following are often asked. Despite the vaccine, people are still being infected. What does that mean in terms of the virus mutating? So I'm getting the vaccine, but I still am infected with the virus. What does that mean for future mutations? These are the questions the public is asking. What does that mean for possible booster shots then, if necessary in the future? Is the country geared for that? Will we have enough vaccinations? Should it be necessary for a booster shot? And then the whole question of herd immunity, Dr. Chris did clarify that to a certain extent. But the question is, how many people in South Africa would it be necessary to be vaccinated in terms of achieving herd immunity, especially in terms of the Delta variant currently? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. We will move to Member Chabaleng.
Thanks, Chairperson. My bandwidth is compromised, so my video will remain off for now. Chairperson, I had the DM in his opening remarks talking about Europe and that the vaccination levels, community vaccination or herd immunity, that one. It's people are going to stadiums, they're watching soccer and all those. And then he said it's possible that by the end of this year, we could be at that level in South Africa. That is very encouraging. And what does it take to get there? I've taken my two doses. But I was really impressed during the weekend when I had that the Department of Health in Limpopo, actually in Skukuniland in the district, they are phoning institutions that have people who work there and who work with other people, approaching them for vaccination. And I'm told today they'll be vaccinating people at the only hotel in the area, so which is a very positive move. We're beginning to take steps to go to people rather than saying people should come to us. To the Limpopo Health team, well done. Keep it up. I just want to check in terms of the vaccinations. We're only using two here. What is the process? What is the progress in terms of getting other vaccines from other countries? Do we need them or don't we need them?
Member Tongeni.
Thank you, Chair. Hello. Thank you.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Let me open. I'm not quite sure about the video. Morning, members. Morning, Minister. Morning, Deputy Minister. In fact, it's Deputy Minister. Congratulations. Think about the report you have given to us. But we have some smaller nyana questions. Né? For instance, what will the department do if the vaccine registration numbers continue to decrease? They have a plan to assist. We are assisting on that, but it's not enough. Since we have enough vaccination, can we please open another site? It's a plea now. For another site, whether it's school, it's what, because this site we have in rural areas sometimes or so far. So they say they don't have money to go there. If we can open in schools, at least near the people, I can be glad. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, members, for your question. DM and the DDG, I've got a whole bunch of questions. I firstly want to commend the department for the excellent work that this department has done in mitigating the impact of COVID-19. The country is currently facing a third wave, and there is reports that we are awaiting a fourth wave. My question is, are there any plans in place to ensure that the fourth wave is contained or controlled better than the current or the previous waves? That's my first question. Then, Deputy Minister, reports indicate that 28 million of 38 million adults will need to be vaccinated to meet the government's target to vaccinate 70% of the adult population by December. However, reports also indicate that only around 9 million people, which is 10%, have been vaccinated in addition. The Department of Health recently reported that the vaccination registration numbers are decreasing, which is a concern. How is the department planning to reach its population vaccination target by the end of this year? What will the department do if the vaccination registration numbers continue to decrease? How is the department monitoring the adverse effects, if there are any, suffered by recipients of all vaccines currently in use in South Africa? What are those adverse effects and how severe are those adverse effects? Deputy Minister, there are social reports, WhatsApp and Facebook, indicating that some people die after receiving the vaccination doses. Is there empirical data to substantiate or refute those reports? How is the department dealing with these social media reports? Because these social media reports may be fueling the vaccine hesitancy among certain members of our population. It seems to be more females than males in terms of taking vaccination. What could be the reason behind the low vaccine uptake amongst males as compared to females? During the month of July 2021,
The country witnessed violent protests in KZN in Gauteng. These violent protests resulted in vandalism and looting of public and private property, which include pharmacies. The South African Pharmacy Council reported that at least plus minus 131 pharmacies had been destroyed, and 80% of those were in KZN. Obviously, this excuse me, would lead to a situation in which many people were unable to access their medication. It would be helpful for the committee to have some sense of the damage caused by the violent process in these two provinces. What is National Department of Health's initial understanding of the damage? More importantly, what are the concrete plans for getting those facilities operating again, especially for people with chronic diseases who needed to access their medication? Deputy Minister, there seems to be an increase in the number of COVID cases in KZN. Can this be linked to the large gatherings during the unrest and also in earlier weeks in KZN and Swane? And last, and large movements of people, not only within provinces, but also across provincial lines. Is there a targeted approach to try and accelerate the vaccine program, especially in the affected provinces of KZN and Gauteng? The department reported that it wanted to inoculate all 1.2 million people in the health sector before moving on to other population groups. What is the current number or percentage of healthcare workers that have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19? And lastly, Chairperson, I want to share the sentiments of the other members when it comes to reports on positive cases amongst children. Can the department share with this committee research done and the impact of COVID-19, especially this variant, on children? I'm coming from the Overberg region, DM, in the Western Cape, and I am very glad to see that this region is amongst the top five of the vaccination program in the country. But I want to urge the department to ask this top regions, let me call it regions, district, municipality, areas, to share the best practices of what they are doing so that we can share the best practices with other districts. The Overberg region is also seen as a rural district. And I want to urge members to be, and also all members of parliament, councillors, people with influence, to be more vigilant in your districts where you come from. Because we must set the example, we must set the tone. And we must be there to encourage people to go for the vaccines. But DM, the work is enormous out there. And I think when we start with this process, when we start with COVID-19, not a single one of us knew what is expected from us, how this virus will have an impact in our country. Today, we have learned a lot of lessons. But I think one of the lessons and one of our first interactions was with the faith fraternity. And I think one of the reasons, and I have experienced this in my daily life while I am interacting with people in my communities, one of the influences that can be used is your faith fraternity and your traditional leaders. That some of our leaders within the faith is even those who are not encouraging people to go for the vaccine. I think from the department side, from the minister and the deputy minister side, we need to interact more with the influences in our society to give the facts and not the myths, so that people can know exactly what is the reason. A lot of issues is outside the DM. But I think if we as public reps can be more vigilant and talk to the people and have more like radio shows or TV shows where we can influence people to go for the vaccine, I think we will win this battle. But let me take this opportunity to once again thank the department and even the previous minister, who's no longer the minister, for the good work done during this COVID period. Thank you. I will hand over to the DM now and his department to come back with answers on our questions. Thank you, DM.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and all the members with the questions that they have posed. I just want to allocate to the team that is with me what they should prepare as responses, which I won't be able to touch. The vaccine types that are outstanding, and where are we? Issues of fake news. What happens to those already vaccinated? Can we open sites at schools or expand anywhere? Our comments on the fourth wave, the adverse effects and the deaths, if there are any related to that. The damaged infrastructure, how much it has affected us. This one in my previous responsibility as a chair of the Portfolio Committee of Health, we were about to embark on a visit to these two provinces. So I missed that part, and I haven't had a better briefing in the department in terms of did we have a lot of extensive damage there. So the officials accompanying me may able to actually respond to that, and the percentage of healthcare workers affected. If I were to start, Honorable Chair, I'll start from my very last comment of the influencers, and which is a very critical point. We cannot overemphasize that, but I want to start that with Honorable Bach, who started asking questions. That Honorable Bach, we commend you, and maybe if you could tomorrow post your successful second dose. You're an influencer in your own right as a member of parliament in the constituency of our country. So do post that. It was just that and that alone may just actually encourage and stimulate other people to see that an honorable member has just finished his vaccination process. Let me then go start and do that. Honorable members, the scientific world is saying to us these vaccines are safe to use from 18 years and above. So we have not had science that is actually saying let's give a 17-year-old, a 12-year-old, but maybe the two members who are here could actually emphasize on that. Therefore, we are not able to vaccinate a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old to date with the present vaccines that are there in the country and in the world. Honorable members, you are all of you emphasizing communication. We would also want to say this is a priority of the minister. Minister Pasha has called all on us to say, let's put our heads together. How do we maximize communication? Especially as Honorable Gillian is saying, on the faith-based organizations and traditional leaders. Part of the best practices that we are actually excited about is what came out from the Limpopo province, where the MEC was visibly with the a leadership of the very big church in that area that has about over 3 million worshippers. There, those leaders openly taking the vaccines. Obviously, it was a very big statement to say, therefore, all my followers should feel sort of like I'm influencing them to go on and do this and do vaccination. So not surprised that we are seeing Limpopo province as one of those very rural, but actually getting the numbers that they are getting. We think part of that is related to that very big influence that came from the leadership in there. Honorable Luthuli is asking a question that is related to what Honorable Gillion is asking our chair. I was listening to the Premier of the province of KwaZulu-Natal saying they are suspecting, and probably they are probably correct, that the recent unrest in the province where people were all over without masks in that looting spree could be a source of this big numbers. Now we are seeing numbers. I mean, the currently of the about 9,000 per day new infections, about 2,000 from Western Cape. Now about 1,900 from KwaZulu-Natal, the second to the Western Cape. We see Gauteng has gone down to about 600 per day. So this probably might be a cause that the wave is high at KwaZulu-Natal related to those unrest. The issues of if you are vaccinated, can you still get an infection and what is the percentage? I won't know the percentage, but what is the good news? And which is related to what Honorable Brian and Honorable Tu were asking, that at least we can safely say 9 million vaccinated, because they are including those who have had a single dose for now. Because there's also information coming in from scientists that if you are having at least a first dose, you are close to 80% protected against getting a severe COVID-19 infection. Then that is good news to actually go into. Maybe in the issue of Honorable Christians, how do we actually protect the children? Maybe other methods, but not the vaccine, as I indicated. Maybe some other members could add on that part. Yeah, I think Honorable Christians, it would be to just employ some of them best practices that we see in the Limpopo, because Limpopo is also a rural province, but we see success stories therein. We also are weary of the information that is out there causing the vaccine hesitancy among South Africans. And yes, something has been done about it, but much more still needs to be done and must be done to make sure we combat that, because otherwise we will not be able to make progress on this part. Honorable Chabeleng, this is our desire, because we now sit here as South Africans, some of us who are asked to lead in this process, we are very much aware that we hold a success to the country opening up more on its businesses, on tourism, and on sporting activities. Those countries have actually close to their herd immunity. Therefore, they can go into the stadium, sit next to the other, sometimes with or without a mask. I don't know, we are still saying even if you are vaccinated, you must still wear a mask. But what that says is that even if they get infection, it will not be a severe infection. You know, in the country and everywhere in the world, close to winter times, people who are vulnerable usually take a flu vaccine. What it does is that it doesn't stop them getting a flu illnesses during winter. So that in winter, there's a lot of flu. But what it says that when that flu comes into you with that vaccine taken, you will be less likely to be admitted into the ICU and they die. So the same principle here, to actually push numbers. I know this is a desire of Minister Pasha to say what we do in the next 4 months, in terms of the vaccination rollout, will determine what happens to our country's tourism, business, and the sports activities beginning of next year. So we are pushed by that dream of the minister, and we are actually working hard on that part. On the last part, towards the Honorable Leon, generally in the world, and South Africa being part of, females have a desire to be a health-seeking behavior group of people. Men do not do that. Females usually visit clinics just to check if things are still okay, everything is going well. They don't go to clinics because they are sick sometimes. And therefore, that is the same principle in the trend that we see, that females are more able to come forward and then participate in the vaccine programs than we see amongst males. And yes, it's true, the part of the gathering in KwaZulu-Natal, as indicated by the Premier of the province, and also what is our suspect is that it had an impact in actually increasing the numbers of people who are actually infected. May I then ask the team that is here with me to add on some of those that I have indicated that they can do better than me in answering them?
Deputy Minister, thank you, Chair. I'll go through, there are a few which I think Dr. Pillay can also answer, so I'll leave those ones and he can pick up if I leave some out. So there are a number of issues. The one is that we have been very impressed that rural areas have generally performed so well, especially in the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo. And I think it's because they have tailor-made their strategies to understanding how those communities behave. And they have shared those lessons with the other provinces. And there's been really very good exchange in the last 10 days or so. Western Cape had a specific one-on-one meeting with Limpopo. Limpopo made a presentation to all of us to explain how they had managed to get their figures up. So I do think that we are going to see some different initiatives taking place where provinces have now shared the different things that they are doing. The questions raised by Honorable Letuli, the main way to reduce infections is to avoid gatherings, wear your mask, and wash your hands. And that it will be the mainstay. So the message has got to keep going out all the time. We know that we are vaccinating, and we know that people who have been vaccinated are getting messages very clearly that this is going to protect you from severe infection. But we are not reinforcing the message that everybody needs to continue to stop spreading the virus by wearing masks, staying in, you know, avoiding big gatherings, keeping social distance, and so on. We are not at a point yet where we can let our guard down. The question asked about fake news, I think, is a very pertinent one. We do retort and rebut fake news as often as we can, but it is extremely difficult on social media. And we would encourage everybody, especially everybody on this platform that's got stature and status in their communities, to assist by rebutting. Get the information from the health department and then bring it to the attention of whoever is spreading these false stories. And don't only rely on the health department to do it. It is true that people who have been vaccinated, as the Honorable Deputy Minister said, it is true that even if you've been vaccinated, you can still get infected. But your chances of being sick from that infection specifically seriously ill is extremely small. So it's the same, as he said, with flu vaccines and others. You can get breakthrough infections with people who have been vaccinated. It's about the degree of illness that matters. The chances of ending up in an intensive care unit or dying if you've had vaccines is extremely small, whereas it's not so small if you weren't vaccinated, especially if you happen to be over 60. So maybe just to mention a bit about, I think Honorable Christians asked about children. We do not have vaccines in South Africa that are registered for use under the age of 18. Most countries aren't doing that yet. There is a lot of research that's going on all over the world, and we've had a presentation from one of our vaccine manufacturers showing us the research that they are doing on vaccination in children. We do expect to get some research findings and some proposals available in the next 2 or 3 months on children between the age of 12 and 18. And we know that there's research going on vaccination between the age of 2 and 12, but that will definitely not be ready until the new year. In the meantime, what we need to do is to get as many adults vaccinated as is possible until we are sure that the vaccines are safe enough for use in children and we can roll it out. We are anticipating both vaccination of children and booster doses. At the moment, there's no evidence that we need booster doses. The research is going on both in this country and in other parts of the world. But I think that knowing how other vaccines behave and understanding about how immunity does wane over time, we can anticipate that we might need to have booster doses annually into the future. And we do need to plan for that as we look ahead and look at our vaccines. The Northern Cape has a unique challenge, as you've mentioned, Honorable Christians, and that is the vast distances. Now, when we had planned the original rollout to the Northern Cape, the plan was to use Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which would have meant that the outreach by the health departments would only have to happen once because it's a single-dose vaccine. When we did not get Johnson & Johnson vaccine, Northern Cape Province Health Department had to completely redesign their delivery system, and it meant changing the fridges, changing the needles, changing the syringes. Everything had to change to accommodate a far more difficult vaccine to work with that has to be at colder temperatures and that requires two doses. We are deliberately, now that we have Johnson & Johnson vaccine, pushing Johnson & Johnson vaccine to rural areas where it's extremely difficult to get back to the same people twice. And so I believe they are organized and they will rapidly start to catch up. So they are not as big a worry for me as some other districts are around the country. Time will tell, but that's where we are. It's absolutely true that people are frightened and there's a lot of scaremongering goes, and that relates to Honorable Lutuli's question of how we counter messages that are obviously not accurate and are not giving the true picture of the value of vaccines. And I think that Deputy Minister has said, and in fact, Honorable Gillian said, as leaders in the community, every one of us, every one of you and every one of us in the health department really needs to make our voices heard to overcome that. So the question about herd immunity is very elusive. Just this morning, I was reading an article and seeing what is being said in the United States. And I think we do have formulas of how we try to calculate the herd immunity based on what is called the R factor or the replication of viruses. But the truth is we don't actually know. And especially because we are not able to anticipate how many more variants there may be or how those variants might affect us. The bottom line is to vaccinate as many people as we possibly can. And there were questions about the figures. We would like to vaccinate 35 million people by the end of the year. That at the moment with the rate we are going is going to be a tall ask, and we have the capabilities of doing it. We have the vaccine to do it. But now we've got to get people to see the value of vaccinations and get them to the vaccinating stations. I mean 35 million doses of vaccine, sorry, which is about 25, 26 million individual people. It's true we're aiming to get to at least 70% of the adult population, and the adult population rounded off is about 40 million. So we need to get to 70% of 40 million if we are truly going to see that we curtail transmission. But these are numbers. At the end of the day, it's how society responds and what we do with the human element that matters. So for us to chase the figures alone is not necessarily particularly valuable. We do know that all provinces have at least one or two sites that open over weekends. But some of them have got more than that, and there have been vaccination stations open in most provinces in the last month or so. But it is very difficult because the population don't necessarily move around because vaccination stations are open weekends. And until we understand the patterns of use it's going to be hard to match the capability and the capacity over weekends with where people really are. But it is, I think it was Honorable Chabeling who mentioned this. There was also a question asked about two vaccines. So at the moment, we use our mainstay is Pfizer, and our second vaccine is Johnson & Johnson. We have done a lot of work on Sinovac and on AstraZeneca. So let me deal with AstraZeneca first. It was the first vaccine that we received in South Africa, and then that was during the time of the Beta variant. And unfortunately, it was shown that the Beta variant did not respond well. We did not make enough immunity from the Johnson & Johnson, the AstraZeneca vaccine to the Beta variant. And so we did not proceed with AstraZeneca. However, AstraZeneca does seem to be effective against the Delta variant. Not as good as Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer from what the figures that we have, but it certainly does seem to have protective effect. So it's one potential other vaccine. Sinovac is in a similar position where it appears to have reasonable, not as good as Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, but reasonable coverage and immune response to the Delta variant. So it's definitely a vaccine that we are looking at as a third option. It was registered with conditions for entry into South Africa, including some specific additional research. And we are busy with that additional research together with the Medical Research Council and the Department of Science and Innovation. And they will do what's called a rolling review. At least then we will have two more potential vaccines that have been authorized, and we understand how they behave in our community. And we can then make decisions of whether we need to procure from both of those or only one of those in due course. So we are making progress, but there are other vaccines, but they tend to be very expensive. So the question of opening more sites, and especially in the Eastern Cape, I think it was the Honourable Ndongeni, all provinces are opening more sites all the time. So as they discover, so we analyze together with them and with the private sector, where are the gaps? In other words, where there's lots of people, and we are seeing very few vaccinations. And then we pass the information to the provinces and to the private sector to look for additional sites that could be viable. So not all vaccination sites are in health facilities. There are many in malls. There are some that have in fact been in schools. There are some in tribal offices in the rural areas. There are some that are in local municipal offices. So it very much depends on where the province is able to secure a site that's accessible. But we will continue to remind the Eastern Cape about that. I would like to thank the Honourable Gillian, because we get a lot of flack and we get accused of all kinds of things, and the media is quite hostile at times. And it's really nice to receive compliments, because the team, it's a massive team that works on vaccinations, and it's a huge number of health workers who really struggle day and night to look after those who get sick. So just to appreciate your appreciation of what the department is doing, that's very, very nice to hear. Thank you. The question of adverse events, and it's not adverse effects, it's adverse events. So what happens is globally, all countries that are part of the World Health Organization's assembly monitor all adverse events against all vaccines. And we have been monitoring adverse events following immunization for many years in South Africa, and are part of that global reporting structure. In our case, it goes through, when an adverse event is reported, it goes through a committee called NICEC, which is an independent committee of health professionals who examine what has happened with that event. And their attempt is to determine whether there's a causal link between the vaccine and the outcome, or whether the cause is, whether it's just an association that just happened around the same timing. Now, that information then goes to SAHPRA, our regulator, and they report in a global way so that we contribute to the global knowledge of what kind of adverse events and even side effects happen in vaccines, in this case, in this vaccine. SAHPRA has now put together a website that will go live this week, And that website contains a lot of the information about what is an adverse event, how to report it, what has been reported so far in quite a lot of detail for each of the vaccines, and issues around the deaths that have been reported so far. And when they presented to us yesterday, they informed us that of the 29 deaths that have occurred after vaccination, so far not one has been determined to be causally linked to either of the vaccines. So the patients have died, but it was not attributed to the vaccine in any of the cases that have been examined so far out of those 29. We want that information in the public domain so that it's very transparent, and we would encourage people, as soon as we announce that that website is live, to go and familiarize themselves with the definitions and what is being reported and how to report. I think the Deputy Minister has responded about males. I won't respond to that. And I'm sure Dr. Pile might want to respond more about what is happening in KwaZulu-Natal after the violence. So in terms of healthcare workers, we have vaccinated, to round it off, around 1 million healthcare workers at this point. And that includes the broader definition of health workers, which was brought in after the towards the end of the Sisonke study. So about 1 million people have been vaccinated in the broader healthcare description. There are still people who trickle in from time to time. We are still vaccinating, particularly students who are in their clinical years. And as they get into clinical environments, it's important to have them vaccinated. But essentially, it's 1 million healthcare workers have now been vaccinated. We are sharing best practices, and I think that is starting to bear fruit. And the very important observations from the Honorable Chair about faith leaders and us talking to faith leaders and using influencers, we are aware of those and actually have been discussing a more intensive plan during the last couple of days and over the past weekend. We are working very closely with GCIS and a group of people who have been designated from B4SA to have the private and the public sector working very closely on a program of communication. But it's not only communication, it's also the way the health services respond to the needs of communities which differ from one place to the other. So perhaps, DM, if I leave it there, Chair, if I leave it there, I'm sure there are a couple of questions Dr. Pile will be better placed to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Crisp. Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister and colleagues. So there's a couple of questions that I can deal with. I think the first relating to COVID and the younger population, I think that was one of the questions. Certainly when we had the first variant, which was the alpha, and then we went to the beta, at that point our understanding of COVID was that it affected more the adult population than it did children. However, with the emergence of the Delta variant, I think finding has been changed quite significantly, as we've seen many more children being infected and hospitalized as well. The thinking at the time was that the COVID or the coronavirus actually attaches onto what's referred to as the ACE2 receptor within the respiratory tract, and then multiplies and then causes infection. And this ACE2 receptor is not as well developed in children as it is in adults, and consequently we have this difference in infection. But Delta has changed a lot of that. Also the way symptoms are being presented. So under the beta as well as the alpha infection, when you were infected with COVID, one of the things you had is a cough as well as a loss of taste and smell. In the case of Delta, this seems to be less common. It seems headaches, fever, and runny nose are predominant symptoms from all the data that we have thus far. So there are significant differences with Delta on how it presents as well as the age groups that it's infecting. So it's certainly infecting more younger age groups as compared to the others. As Dr. Crisp was saying, at this stage, the vaccines are not approved for use in persons below the age of 18. There are a number of studies going on, and hopefully those would be positive, and that would allow us then to extend the vaccination to the younger age groups. I think the question around the fourth wave, as well as the infections in KZN, let me say firstly that we are very much still in the throes of the third wave. The inland provinces have largely experienced the brunt of the third wave, and Gauteng had had a large third wave, and this also affected the Free State, Northwest, the Northern Cape, and Limpopo quite severely. But then the infection spread to the more coastal provinces of the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN. And currently, that's largely what's driving the numbers in the country around spread of infection. So I think we're very much in the third wave still. We haven't kind of got out of that. If you look at our positivity rate, we're sitting at above 20% overall in the country, and in some provinces, it's over 30%, which basically means that if you're walking in an environment that at least one in two or one in three people in some places are positive, you wouldn't know who they are. But clearly, if you're exposed to such persons, you would certainly contract COVID. So we're still very much in the third wave. But just to say, our measures, whether we're dealing with the third wave or the fourth wave, is to increase the testing in a particular area using both PCR, and you may know we also have the rapid antigen tests that are available now, and both these tests will continue to be used. When we identify people that are positive, we encourage them to go into quarantine, and those that may be exposed also to isolate. And then we do a lot of contact tracing. One of the big challenges with contact tracing is always those that are infected need to tell us as to who their close contacts were. And people seem to somehow be reluctant to share that information, which then makes it almost impossible to know who the contact of a particular person is. And we really need to encourage our community to share that information. It's not in any way intended to be punitive, but to advise these people that they may be infected and they need to go into isolation. We will continue to use the methods that we know work effectively, which is mask wearing, social distancing, discouraging gatherings, particularly funerals and other environments where people are in very close contact with each other, and there's easy spread of the virus in that context. We know that the Delta variant is certainly highly transmissible relative to all the other variants. And what we don't know is that as the virus multiplies, what new variants are going to emerge globally or in South Africa. And so the best way to protect ourselves is to make sure that we use masks, social distance, avoid gatherings, or any other behaviors that may result in the excessive spread. Remember, the development of the variant is dependent on the virus multiplying. And as we allow it to multiply by spreading, we are then perpetuating the spread of other variants, or the development of other variants. I do want to also come in on the point relating to breakthrough infections. I think it's very important to emphasize this, particularly in the vaccine program, that the vaccines are not sterilizing, implying that when you have a vaccine, it does not mean you'll not be infected. Because if you're exposed to somebody that is infected, and if you are in close contact, you will breathe in the viral particles. They will land within your respiratory tract and will eventually start multiplying. The benefit of the vaccine is that your immune system is being trained to respond to the virus when it starts multiplying. So although you've been infected, you are able to mount a response to the infection, which prevents you from getting severely ill or hospitalized. And so that's the benefit of the vaccine. The vaccine is not sterilized. And so it doesn't mean that if you had the vaccine and you're exposed to an infected person, the virus won't get into your body and wouldn't be able to multiply. That would still happen, but your body will then be able to mount a response. So I think many people who say vaccines are not working need to understand that we're talking about vaccines mounting a response to prevent severe infection as well as mortality. On the issues relating to the protests in the provinces that were largely predominant in KZN and parts of Gauteng, the health departments in both these provinces have been able to manage the situation. And at this stage, a number of facilities have now opened. There are a few that were damaged and those that require some repair and maintenance in order to get them back online. But what has happened is that staff at those facilities have been moved to other facilities in order to be able to continue to deliver the service. That would include creating access for medicines and other treatments that they may require. But that did set us back both in terms of vaccination as well as in terms of the routine health services, since communities now may need to travel further distances as a result of the unrest and violence that was associated with those activities. Thank you, Deputy Minister. I'll stop at that point.
Honourable Chair, those were all our responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM, and Dr. Singh and Dr. Pillay for that very good responses. DM, I just have only one concern still regarding the issues of the positive cases that we've seen in children. The relationship between the Department of Health and the Department of Education. I was in my constituency and a lot of concerns, and I think all members can attest to this because I think this will be a concern from all over, is a concern of parents and teachers. And it has to do with the reducing of the social distance that that is proposed. Taking into consideration now, DM, that this virus is also now affecting our children, what is the Department of Health's contribution in this proposal of the social distance and the impact of that it will have in our schools? Thank you, DM.
Yeah. Honorable Chair, I was listening to some other interviews where people were saying, should we or should we not close schools? And the closure of schools is really a no-go area for now, despite the challenges we face. Our children will be far behind if we actually close. Rather, we now know that we will not rely on any vaccine for the children up to less than 18. We then have to actually then rely on these non-pharmaceutical protocols that we are envisaging. Children being children, however, even in the area where I've been, I've seen them playing, losing. In fact, I visited a particular school and I found that they are keeping a mask, because children grade one, grade R, they just lose and tear their mask and they forget some of them. So with that population, we need to continue actually preaching the non-pharmaceuticals. But I haven't been able to hear what more will the Department of Health support the Department of Education with in terms of these challenges. Safe to say our visibility there, continuously these messages that we are raising, because some of the schools are challenged by space. I know some of them were having rotational classes that grade one come today and then tomorrow is grade two, this, that, and the other. But now they found that they are so far behind that they are bringing everybody to school at the same time. Now, I don't know whether maybe falling short of closing schools, they should go back to that rotational program and process, and maybe using longer hours and rotate, because they, that will on its own impact on the social distancing. So I don't know. I would really rely on the ongoing discussions that should take place. And that is my view for now, to say, so that we don't close schools, can we maybe take a second batch, which is the rotating students in classes, and reduce the numbers to those that are acceptable. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that answer. I think it can, and it can ease most of the parents and teachers' concerns that there is still ongoing discussions between the Department of Health and the Department of Basic Education, because none of us wants to see our children out of education. But I think it will be good if the two departments can have a follow-up discussion on that one. Members, is there anybody who have a follow-up question? Okay, it doesn't seem like it. Let me then take the opportunity to thank Dr. Dlomo and his team for honoring this invitation to come before the Select Committee this morning. I really need to thank all members for their participation, and all our staff members, our supporting staff members. Thank you very much. DM, we're wishing you and the Minister well on your further endeavours, and to make sure that we adhere to the calls of the people of South Africa. And yes, DM, we can make a difference if all of us can just work together and make sure that everybody around us adhere to the call to keep the social distance, sanitize, wearing of masks, and also to go out and spread the word about the vaccine. From my side, thank you very much, GM. Convey also our good and best wishes to the Minister from the Select Committee. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. We are now exiting your meeting. We will convey our thanks to your messages of commendation and congratulations to the Minister, Dr. Pasha. Thank you.
Thank you. You and your team are excused, GM.
Congratulations to you, GM.
Thank you, Bam Chabele.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, my mic was muted. We can continue with our business as the Select Committee. I will ask Tabile to slide the reports for us so that we can adopt all these reports, outstanding reports. Thank you, Tabi. Members, the first report that we need to adopt, I think all the reports were sent by email from Marcel to all members, is the report of the Select Committee of Health and Social Services and the annual performance plan and budget of the Department of Health, sorry, dated 16 March 2021. I need a mover for the adoption, please.
Ndongeni Chair, move the adoption of Tanapot.
Thank you, Member Ndongeni. Is there a seconder for this report?
I second Chairperson Bacha.
Thank you, Member Bacha. The next one, Tabi. Okay, the report of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services and the Budget Vote 19, the annual performance plans of the Department of Social Development and its entities for 2021-22, dated the 1st of June 2021. Can I have a mover, please?
Ndongeni moves the report to be adopted.
Thank you, Member Ndongeni. Is there a seconder?
Please.
Christian, second.
Thank you, Member Christian. So this report is adopted. Can we move, Tabi, to the next one? We will do the committee minutes now. Okay, it's a draft minutes of the Subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities and the Select Committee on Health and Social Services. It was a closed meeting on the 15th of July 2021 and it was the deliberations with candidates and the findings by the State Security Agency. All members of our committee were present. So can I have a mover for this adoption of the minutes? Is that Member Lee?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Member Lee. Can we have a seconder?
Bacha seconds, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Bacha. We can move then to the adoptions. Is there more minutes, Tabi, or can we move to the third program?
Yes, there's another picture. I'm going to share it just now.
Thank you. Okay, this was also a joint meeting of the filling of vacancies in the National Youth Development Agency. And it was also the 15th of July. It was a consideration and adoption of the report and the recommended NYDA board candidates, consideration and adoption of subcommittee meeting, and all members of our committee were present. There were no apologies. Can we have a mover for the adoption of this minute?
Baja moves, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Baja. Is there a second for the adoption of the minutes?
Dungeni.
Thank you, Member Dungeni. This minute has been adopted. Tabi, we will now move to the adoption of the committee's third term program. Am I right? Members, the third term program is in front of you. As you can see, we will still continue with virtual platform. I need a mover and a seconder for this program.
Chairperson, can I just ask clarity, please, Chairperson?
Yes, you can.
Can we just go further up? Are we saying that we're having it's a whole lot of joint meetings again?
No.
Oh.
We're not saying. The first meeting is today, the 17th. That was with the Department of Health. And you can remember that during the last term, the previous term, there was meetings that we could not meet because either the department or the NCOP program has not permitted us to do the approved meetings. Like, for instance, the briefing by the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities and the APP and budget vote, we had to postpone that meeting. And then even the one with DSD and the Auditor General's finding on the outcome of the COVID-19 stimulus relief fund packages, we had to postpone that meeting as well. Then the joint meeting with the PC and Social Development, this is a new one. It's a recommendation of the additional candidates to fill the vacancies on the CDA board. As you can remember, Member Kirsten, I think there's two vacancies. One of them of the members passed on, and then I think there was another one that resigned or something, but there is vacancy, so we just had to do that one joint meeting so that we can fill the vacancies on the CDA board. Then in September, the next week, the 7th of September, we will have a briefing by the Department of Social Development in SASA. It's a progress report on the implementation of the social relief program and the progress report and intervention to address the effects of Gauteng province in case it in unrest and social development facilities. Then the 14th of September will be the briefing by the Medical Research Council. It's an overview of the recent findings on COVID-19 related research. Then it will also be the consideration and the adoption of our committee's fourth term program and the consideration and adoption of our committee meetings. So there will only be one joint meeting. Does that clarify everybody?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christian. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the program?
Ndongeni.
Thank you, Member
Dungeni. Move the adoption of the program.
Thank you, Member Dungeni. Can we have a seconder?
Lee.
Thank you, Member Lee. Members, that brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you for all your participation and wishing you well. And please, members, I'm also going on Friday, Member Baha, for my second jab. And I want to urge members who did not have a jab yet to please set an example and go and get yourself vaccinated and your family. I have a rule in my house now. If you're not vaccinated, you don't enter my house.
So keep safe, members, and stay safe. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank
I
you,
won't
Chair.
Come to the house before tomorrow.
Thank you,
yes.
Chair.
Thank you. Okay.
Recording stopped.
So it means I'm not coming to your house.